don't put this part in. You're going to edit this part out. Okay.
This is the order of battle.
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
Like, famous, I guess not famously, but like the first time you and I actually talked was at Joe Lanta 2 years ago.
Yes.
And that was the first time I really got to know Chris and Don and John and, you know, a bunch of you guys. That was an awesome night.
That was probably my favorite Toy Lanta ever.
Well, it was Joe Lanta.
Was it?
It was absolutely Joe Lanta. Yeah. Yeah. So what everyone had always told me about Joe Lanta was like, that's kind of the 12-inch show. That's what's there. That's what it's about. And so that show 2 years ago that we went to was a 12-inch show. There was other stuff, like Esther's Toy Den was there, you know, Slaughter was there. There was some other stuff, but it was primarily, or at least that was my perspective, it was primarily a 12-inch show. And it was real slow. And everyone said it was the weekend after Dragon Con, and that might have been why, but it was small and it was slow. And I was in a terrible place. This year, and like Brett kind of had talked this up to me a couple of times about how like he was kind of trying to change it up and grow the show. And I would say he absolutely succeeded. The big, the elephant in the room, the gorilla-phant in the room was the weather.
That impacted attendance a lot.
Right. And like it in a very obvious, noticeable way, just based on ticket sales and how many people came. That's my understanding. That's what I heard. That they could look at, especially like the early bird tickets and how many of those sold versus how many of those people came. Nobody bought one of those tickets on a whim, like, maybe I'll go. Maybe I don't know. No one's spending that money to do that. And then just like, I don't feel like going out tonight and then not going. So.
But who knew we would be in the perfect pocket of gorgeous, beautiful weather.
Right.
And within 30 minutes of us was Bedlam.
In any direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. It was weird. You know, just while we're there, we're watching, you know, you're seeing the news every once in a while. You're hearing about devastation, roads getting, towns getting wiped out. There were people that came down that couldn't go back home because like the roads that they used to get here were gone.
There were a couple people that didn't, there were a couple vendors that last minute had to call off because of it. And so if the vendors are doing that, then so are the attendees and the ticket prices or the ticket sales were showing that. But like, yeah, it was still a good show, but the weather impacted Brett's mission.
And I'll tell you what, I was unaware that there were vendors that didn't show up. Like you couldn't tell by walking around. There was no like empty obvious spots where someone should have been. And I imagine whoever was next to them maybe just like grew over and stretched out. But the vendors showed up, man. Content wise, like it was the floor plan was good. There was plenty of room, but there were plenty of table. It was a good show. So it's really unfortunate, you know?
Yeah. The aisles were so wide and comfortable that he could have probably had about 20% more vendors and still had room, but leaving the aisles that wide just made it very comfortable to walk around, not bump into people.
Yeah.
I liked the show floor. You know, right outside the show floor was the little cafe. It's a convention cafe, so prices are never great, but it's convenient. And a lot of us vendors never eat during the day because we never leave our booths. So having it, you know, 20 feet from the door was fantastic.
So we ended up eating a lot of Chick-fil-A. I think Chris had drove over there once. I walked to it at one point. I walked to Chick-fil-A and brought back lunch for a couple folks. Like location-wise, it was great.
Location-wise for places to eat was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have no kind of complaints about the show. It's just unfortunate that like one of the worst hurricanes we've had in years happened to roll through right on top of it.
So aside from, you know, a hurricane messing up attendance, I thought the show was good. How was it for you?
I'll tell you what the best part of the show. I had the extremely fortunate luck to be right next to Mr. Hill. I can listen to that dude's stories all day. Holy cow. Super nice guy. And like, you know, just thinking about some of this, like the offhand, like I was telling him about how my dad always mispronounces the name of one of the ships I was stationed on. And it, then, you know, so then his part was like, he had created a transformer for one of the scripts he wrote and didn't include like a how to pronounce it. And the name was a cross between like Gary Gygax, who was a friend of his, who that's the guy that created D&D, and another guy. He just kind of combined their names. And then that name ended up getting mispronounced.
Which, what a wild life that you just...
It's like, you win, dude.
What a wild life where you're friends with Gary Gygax.
Yeah. So anyone listening, like, no kidding. If you go to a show and have the opportunity to see his panel, go, 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 go. Because holy crap. I started thinking about, like, how much I think this guy had an impact on making my childhood awesome.
Absolutely. Huge.
Huge impact. And, you know, as a kid, you don't, you're not like, when the cartoon's over, you don't look at the credits to see who wrote it. But just holy cow. Super nice guy, too.
What I think is funny is that, you know, you guys were tabled very close to each other at Assembly Required last year, and you didn't get a chance to meet him. There was an aisle between you, right? And you were busy at AR. You weren't sitting side by side. You didn't have a chance to go to the panel.
I'm not really an approach a guest and strike up a conversation guy. I'm not really that guy.
I'm with you. I'm the same, but I had the opportunity to help host his panel at AR, and then he came on here and we became friends. But I just think it's funny, like you and I sat beside each other and didn't meet for a couple more years. You sat within 20 feet of him in November and didn't meet until a year later. This is starting to be the Mark story of not meeting the people.
Yeah. If you're 10 feet away, forget about it. You're going to have to basically sit on my lap and then we'll hit it off.
But yeah, being able to sit next to Michael Hill is amazing.
Right. So at AR, two years, whatever the first year I went, like they deliberately put me right next to Ron Wagner because of the whole tattoo thing and the comic book covers. And
Ron is amazing.
He's awesome. Like I never would have I would not have walked up to his table and been like, I'm a huge fan. I think you really had a huge influence on me becoming an artist. I never would have just walked up and done that. But because they stuck me next to him, thank you again, Travis and Brian. We just chit-chatted the whole weekend and like kind of friendly. And then last year at AR, I'm like, I gotta get a head scan for this guy. So I got Ron Wagner at AR. That's when I started talking to Hill at the show. Like he's like, I remember you from Assembly Required. You scanned Ron Wagner's head. I was just like, holy shit. That was pretty cool.
He had asked me about that before he met you at Jolana. He was like, hey, do you remember at AR there was a guy scanning heads? Is that a thing? And I was like, well, it's only a thing if you're Raging Spoon or Mark II Designs. And you probably saw Mark because you were across from him.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to scan Michael's head?
I talked to him about it. I mean, he's not an action figure guy and he doesn't know what he'll do with it. And what I told him, I'm like, do you have kids? He said he's got a son, but he's, you know, late 30s. I'm like, I guarantee you he'd love it.
Yeah.
Like I kept telling people, my dad was here like 2-3 weeks ago. I scanned him. So I still need to finish it. Like projects for myself, I'll usually take a backseat. But look at this guy.
Hey.
What's up?
Nothing.
You're just parachuting? Are you throwing him off the back deck or something?
No, just saying hi.
Is he parachuting? Is he throwing 12-inch figures off your roof?
Oh, off the back deck. Yeah.
Do they make parachutes that actually work for that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They're big enough that the cloth will support them. I mean, not in a great manner, but...
Right, right. It slows their descent.
Right. Toylana used to be at a hotel that had a big open atrium in the lobby. And so they would go up to like the 12th or 13th floor and throw and do parachute drops as part of the convention.
With 12-inch figures. I've heard of this being done at one of the Joe shows, but it was...
Joe Kahn would do it with 4-inch figures because they got it from like Toylana doing it with 12.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
And then, of course, you can do the, you know, all the Sky Striker parachutes still work, but nobody's willing to do that, I guess, probably us.
No one's willing to do that.
So when I talked to Michael Hill about it, I didn't even think about the parent angle, which I 100% agree with you on, because I have a head sculpt of Alexander and I could not be more pleased to have that of my kid. I have one of me that he gets to play with. It's amazing. But what I had recommended to Michael Hill was to do a 3 3/4 head like you did for us, so that he could put it on a Claymore.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But since he was the one that wrote the file card for Claymore, and Claymore's file name, his real name, is Michael Hill's grandfather's name.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, put your face on Claymore. It's as close as you're going to get to your grandfather's face. And you wrote the character. You wrote the audio drama.
I need to go back and listen. I remember hearing it when I was a kid. I didn't even listen to the whole thing, but one of my friends had it and I heard a little bit of it. And at the time, I didn't really have a perspective. I do remember the Yo Joe.
Yeah. Michael has some opinions on the performance, but you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a cassette tape that I digitized, because on the backside of the cassette tape, we ended up finding some kid had actually recorded about a minute and a half of him playing with G.I. Joes.
That's awesome.
So I digitized that as well. And now I can't find that file.
Is it that tape right there up over your right shoulder encased in acrylic?
Yes, 100% it is.
Nice.
the same acrylic guy made the case for that, because
of course.
I didn't want to put it on in like an old school cassette case, because I wanted it a little nicer. They're cheap, and this has a sliding door on it, so I can open it, but it's a little more secure. It's thicker acrylic.
There is a end of life on those tapes. Like, the plastic that is that tape is decomposing.
The glue that holds the tape to the reel is also decomposing. Eventually, if that glue comes off, that tape is just going to come off the reel. So if you have cassette tapes, it behooves you to digitize them sooner rather than later. I have a couple personally important cassette tapes. So when I was digitizing those, I grabbed that one and did it too, because I wanted that little kid's, immortalizing some little kid's minute and a half of playing with G.I. Joes. That was why the back half was blank. It was designed to do that.
I have a friend who's a huge audiophile, and I remember years ago, he was really talking up high-end audio cassette tapes. And because like they were still analog, if I remember correct, they're analog, and like the really good ones have amazing sound quality. But if you go back a little further to like a record, you can drop it, you can scratch it, you can break it, but like it's not decomposing at the rate that an 8-track or audio cassette is. And then everything after that's digital.
I don't even own physical music anymore.
I own some, but I never touch it. It's all on my phone now.
So aside from Michael Hill, who you sat beside and that we've just gone, we've fanned on a little bit, because we're friends with him, right? Every night we hung out at the bar.
Yeah. I mean, for a guy that I met kind of the first time, over a weekend, I'm as friendly with him as could be expected, I guess.
Correct. We spent a lot of time just having a few drinks and having a few stories. And because he's on West Coast time, you and him were 2 hours and 3 hours behind Atlanta. So he was up late, and it was always nice to just kind of hang out. So how was the rest of the weekend, other than, getting to sit beside a guy who was both a producer of G.I. Joe and Transformers, as well as a number of other things?
Always great to see Chris and Don, who I roomed with this time. Holy cow, Chris is crushing it with what he's doing.
It's nuts.
The World War hell. And it's, he's got Brian Sauer helping him with some artwork and logos. He's got Carter the Conqueror doing, I think, if not most of, all of the sculpting. And he's crushing it.
So good.
I really need to, I want to meet him at some point and pick his brain. Yeah, and Chris can, he just, painting wise, he's just getting better and better. And this concept is really cool. And you'll have him on to talk about his own stuff at some point. But it visually, very appealing stuff. It's, World War II based with some demons and zombies and cool stuff. And everything just, it looks really solid. And Chris is really kind of latched onto the video store aesthetic for packaging. Not just packaging, but kind of his table.
Yeah.
And my table is just a mess. It's just how much crap can I fit on this little table? I really need to spend some time and figure it out and make it look a little more presentable at some point.
Well, this is where you get Brian and Chris and everybody else to come in.
Yeah. Kind of reach out to my friends and get a little help.
I think the thing that compels me a lot about Chris's stuff is that everybody is playing in the same sandbox and building things that are synergistically cross-compatible, right? And then Chris was like, I'm just going to do something fucking weird. And it's not really designed in a manner that is immediately cross-compatible with everything. But then when you start messing with it, it 100% fits and it would work. But it's not designed to fit in 1986 or 1989 or... And I love it. It's very cool.
Yeah. So it's 1/18 scale. It's O-ring, but it's got ankle articulation, hand articulation. It's just the articulation is better. The sculpting is modern, cutting edge sculpting, and like the figures look amazing.
They're so good.
By going a little smaller, when it comes to production, he's going to save a ton of money on tooling because it's smaller. It means he can do vehicles at some point if he wants. Doing it at the smaller scale enables a lot of things. It technically is the same scale as, you know, a Real American Hero and some of the other O-ring stuff that's coming out, right? But he's not trying to hit the nostalgia bug by doing O-rings. He's pushing the envelope, I think. It just looks fantastic.
That's what I find compelling. Like, I'm going to be able to put these with my Joes, but they don't necessarily match. They're not designed to match my Joes.
Yeah.
I love that he's using the web gear. He's adding the ankle articulation to the conversation, which may be amazing, maybe not, but no one's going to know until he puts it on the table. And just from his prototypes, it looks fantastic, and I'm excited for it.
It enables them to, like, they don't have to be in a static pose to stand
right
without a stand. And that's just huge. It just enables so much more dynamic posing for those little figures that we don't have that from anything else that I'm aware of or that I've collected.
It's going to be a lot of fun. The detail he's putting into it's incredible. And yes, Carter is a monster with those sculpts.
He's just so good. I don't know if the dude doesn't sleep, but from my perspective, I feel like he's turning them out pretty quick.
Well, yeah, if you think he had one on the table in June, you know, right at the beginning of October, he has six or seven. Yeah. He knows what he wants. He knows what he's looking for, and he's driving towards it. And I find that very compelling. And you know, and Chris is a sweetheart and an oddball. So it works all the way around.
What else was there? Carson was across from him, pushing his
tome,
coffee tables, his coffee table with no legs. The book. I love that book, dude.
It's such a good book.
Crack it open and you're 10. It's just great. I'm so thrilled that it exists. I'm so glad that he put that together. Then you had Bobby in the Action Force booth, which I will say this out loud. I love working for that dude. He is a pleasure to work for.
Okay.
And then what you had was Savage Crucible.
Savage Crucible was there.
The Animal...
Animal Warriors of the Kingdom. Jason was there.
And then what's the other one? The Crud. I can't think of the name. Like I did my walk. I'm not looking to get into a new line that's just completely outside of what I do. All their stuff's amazing. The figures are beautiful, but it's kind of just not for me.
I think their foundation is more Motu based, which might be why it's a little harder for some of us to get into it. But the sculpts were gorgeous. And it looks like he was doing a lot of work with other companies, even like, you know, Games Workshop and Four Horsemen and stuff like that, outside as an illustrator and a photographer and digital painter, beyond having his own toy line. It was Brutal Realms.
Brutal Realms. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
It was phenomenal looking.
I'm looking at pictures of the Paint Master.
Yeah, if I was a collector of like Mythic Legions, I would 100% jump into Brutal Realms.
Yeah. Real easy crossover. At some point I'll at least get one of these figures because I just want to kind of play with it and check it out.
Always worth getting a couple of any line.
This is what I want to do. So like it behooves me to see what people are doing, like who's innovating what, you know, what qualities do I like about things? What do I not like?
Well, speaking of you, I mean, you still have your two weapon packs, which are factory made, and you know, I've talked many times about how A and I jerked them out of the plastic trays and put them in figure hands, played with them. They are unceremoniously dumped in our weapon bins with all of our other Star Wars and G.I. Joe 6-inch weapons, and they get played with just like any other Hasbro factory-made thing, right? And they stand up to the test of time. They stand up to play.
They're not 3D prints. They're made. They're
fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Which is why they don't get put on a shelf of my friend made this and treat them like they're gentle. They get tossed in a weapon bin and then jerked out and put into somebody's hands and played with, which is their design, which is what you've done for more than one toy company. And your own stuff is great. But then you also had a lot of 3D printed stuff and resin casted stuff. All of your normal fun things, which I saw people freak out about the laser tag. If you're doing laser tag, have you ever thought about doing photon?
Yeah, of course. Just haven't done it.
Fair enough.
It's interesting because there's people that are photon people, and it's like there's a division.
Yes.
There is a clear line between those two things.
Well, and that's why I brought it up.
You were a photon guy? Or
no, but Phil Donnelly of Articulated Points is a photon guy. And him and Pat Stewart had a whole, more than one of their episodes dedicated to the difference of photon and laser tag and the novels and everything else. And so it's always one of those things that I remember because I have a friendly acquaintance that collects the line.
Yeah. I haven't seen their video, but I know Photon was around first, big time. It's just like they didn't spend as much money in advertising. I think it's kind of what it boils down to. But yeah, thanks. You know, like, I don't know what the future is for Mark II toys and doing the weapon sets. At the end of the day, like, there, no one needs them to complete a collection. And based on that alone, like, sales just was much slower than I expected. If I do a set C or if I do a Kickstarter to do like a box or something, you know, I'll make sure I've got holes for muzzle flashes. I'll make sure I'm still not a fan of removable magazines.
I am not either. I mean, I get the point, but it's something to lose.
I get it. Yeah. Like it could, yeah, something to lose. And one way or another, just because of the scale, you're changing something, whether it's, you know, you're increasing the size of the magazine well, or you're reducing the size of the magazine itself, or a little bit of both. Or you do the thing, like, I think what Hasbro was doing for Joe is, like, the magazine, not that their guns are that realistic, but they just make the part that sticks into the gun smaller,
yeah.
like a Lego top. Any of those things are fine. I'd rather just have it all in one piece, personally. I think it can ultimately look better.
The shot you can't get can still be edited out. You can still, like, there's still ways to do it. Or it's just,
You're talking if you're a toy photographer and you want the I'm reloading picture.
Right. You just choose a different frame for the same aesthetic, right? If I put the hand on the magazine, it's doing the same damn difference. Again, I love the idea of it, but I'm not necessarily a big fan of going through my weapon box and being like, shit, which magazine does this go to? No, I get your point, but I personally love your weapons. And so I'm always an advocate of your weapons. I have some of your non-factory made stuff too. And I like that as well. But since I know these are factory made and you have two sets and they're at the booth and they're on the website, I'm always an advocate of them.
I appreciate it. I actually, like, I think I sold more of those weapon sets at this show than at any of the other shows I've done ever. Like, they've never moved real well at show. The 3D prints always have moved.
Well, those are nostalgia buys.
Yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia stuff because I, you know, like we said, I do the laser tag gun. I do like Joe weapons that don't or at least didn't exist for a long time.
Yeah, I know you have some upgrade kits for classified figures and things like that.
Yep. And that's what I was trying to kind of move that stuff this show. I've got like a Shockwave kit. I've got a kit for Mutt. So it's got his Mac 11. It's got the nightstick he came with and it has like a little clip. So if you want, you can put this little clip on its belt and then put the nightstick that the figure came with through that. And it'll hold it for you. So it gives you kind of options. What else? I got the eel kit. I've got the snow serpent kit. I've been trying to just kind of move that way. I haven't increased the catalog of what I make a whole lot. And primarily just because I have other work and all this stuff takes a lot of time.
Did you pick up anything for your own collection or for yourself? Or was this more of a creator hanging out with creators trip for you?
Great question, Jason. I decided a while ago, I want to buy at least one thing at every show. I'm not going to go and blow a house payment or anything, but I go to these shows, I have a great time, and I want to slowly kind of add to my collection. 6-inch wise, I pre-order everything. Like, I don't need anything, but the old 3 3/4 stuff, I'm slowly just sort of rounding out stuff that I had as a kid or really wanted and didn't get. So like, I won't be buying the rat, but there's plenty of other things I want. And I hadn't decided what the thing I should try and find was until it was at some point on Friday evening. And I thought, you know, I'll try and get the Iron Gnaters, the Razorback, right, with the ball turret. I think my brother, one of us had it. I'm pretty sure it was my brother. Getting all the Iron Gnater stuff that's a reasonable sub-team thing to pick up.
Absolutely.
I've got pretty damn close to all of it, but I don't have that. It might be the only thing I don't have, actually, from the Iron Gnaters. So that's on the short list. I decided that's the thing I'll try and find. I found part of a carcass of one at the show, and that was it. So then late Sunday afternoon, I realized I'm not getting anything. I need to figure something out. And I was like, you know what? I don't have, but people have been asking me to make is the Night Landing. And it's been done. A bunch of people have 3D designed it well. And there's people that sell nice prints of it. I don't print other people's stuff. I don't buy other people's prints because I'm cheap and I can do it myself. So I decided I'll find a Night Landing. And I found one, like, 3D printed one. There's no reason for me to buy that. And then there was one that was way incomplete. And so I'm not buying that. So I just randomly picked two things that just happened to not be there. I imagine if I picked anything else in the entire run of the Real American Hero, 3 3/4 inch over figs, anything else, it was at that show. And I managed to just pick two things I couldn't get.
Years ago, I quit buying, and I just started letting Alexander do most of our buying. Mm-hmm. And so I do the same thing. It's like, I'll probably pick up like one thing, but then he picks up everything else. So he picked up a few things. And the one thing I picked up at this show was, Michael Hill had some Transformer scripts on the table, and the 1985 or 1984, the May 10 Transformer Bible. I don't need them, but I like reading. I love Transformers. I like Michael.
Yeah. Win, win, win.
Yeah. Helped his weekend a little bit and brought those home so that I can go through and read. And I'm already finding some really funny things that I didn't know about Transformers in the Transformer Bible. So I find it extremely charming. I've reached out to Patrick Stewart so we can reference him several times on a show that on this show, since he didn't show up at Jolanta. But I reached out to Pat Stewart and was like, hey, did you know about this? Because I know he's a big Transformer guy. And so I reached out and was like, hey, did you know about this? And he's like, I didn't know about that or that, but the things you're telling me, is it in this Bible versus that Bible? And I was like, Jesus, Pat, you know too much. That was kind of my personal grab for the weekend, was just I bought the Transformer Bible and some scripts. But Alexander brought home a few things.
So what did he get?
He grabbed a couple Savage Crucible items. He grabbed, somebody had a Delta 17 figure at the lobby swap, which was one we already had, but he needed another Delta 17 because it was the Army Builder. And he grabbed a couple G.I. Joe things, a couple 93 figures we don't have. And he picked up a parts vehicle that he's building. But Delta 17 is so good.
I only it's me and my ego. I only picked up the ones that I worked on.
So I did not know that you also worked on Delta 17.
Yeah, I did. Very, very little. I contributed almost nothing. I think I did like 3 guns. They contacted me. I think their stuff was getting ready to get tooled. And I don't know if they just had room in the molds for some more stuff, or I don't know what the story was, but they just had like 3 guns they wanted me to do. It was just kind of quick, easy.
But I mean, it does kind of go backward to what we were talking about earlier, is you've worked on so many different toy lines now, sort of invisibly, because you're not the face or the name of the line. It's not particularly your line.
That's kind of how it goes.
But this is also where we go back to your weapon packs, is like, people have held your work in their hands, so they should go and get your weapon packs because it's directly yours, versus holding your work through their favorite indie toy line. So it's just kind of funny.
It makes me think back to Joe Fest this year, and right next to Chris was Arlen, who is, in my mind, one of, if not the best toy sculptor right now, current modern day.
Dude is incredible.
He's amazing. And Carter's right there too, right? Like, there's a bunch of guys. Arlen was, I really should know this. He was going to be kickstarting these kind of Moon Men astronaut zombie figures. And they're amazing, but like, you know, he was sitting there and he should have had like a Serpentor on the table. So people would be like, what's that about? Oh, I'm the guy that sculpted the Serpentor. Oh, holy shit. You know, like the sculptors that are kind of out there right now, you know, they've got their Instagrams, but you don't hear a lot of them or from them. And it's a relatively small group of people that are doing most of the sculpting right now. Like, it's a surprisingly small group of people, and I don't know that any of them talk to each other at all. Like, I think a bunch of them have met at like a PowerCon and that kind of thing. And then you've got like Corey Cantaloupe, who, you know, managed a bunch of, he knows a bunch of people because he managed the sculpting when he was on the G.I. Joe line, and I imagine some other stuff. So he knows some people, but again, like, I don't know that any of these people like call each other up and pick each other's brains. Like, I've been playing with this idea. I'm kind of working up the nerve to try and get those three guys specifically, because they're the ones I know. Like, get Arlen, get Carter, get Corey, and get them on my G.I. Joe 3D printing podcast that we do sometimes.
That would be incredible. I would watch the shit out of that.
I want to get them on there just so I can listen to them and try and learn some stuff, because I'm not there yet. I think I have the potential to get really good, but I'm still learning. It's ZBrush is what it comes down to. It's like, it is a very, very complicated tool, and I can get from point A to point B, but not necessarily directly. And there's more than one way to do everything. But these guys that have been doing this stuff for years longer than me, like we were talking about with Carter before, like, he was cranking out that stuff for Chris.
Yeah.
And I want to just watch him work and see what his workflow is. And then just from talking to Corey, like, I understand, like, it's a little different because I work with a lot of these independent guys and a lot of like kickstarts and stuff that don't have the experience to know what they really want or how they should receive it. But like, if you're working for Hasbro, like, they want your project file. They want it grouped. They want it separated. They want it in certain folder formats. It's real different than me just sending a single STL file to someone. Here you go. They want to be able to manipulate what you've done after you've finished. They don't just want you to export your project as an STL and then be done. They want the project so they can tool with it. Yeah, I've got a lot to learn still. I'm still, you know, I haven't been a professional 3D artist for that long, really. So I've still got a way to go.
You've been one as long as I've known you. So maybe I'm seeing you as a little more veteran than you're willing to see yourself.
Well, I look at a lot of these guys, you know, they go to school. I don't think Arlen did. I think he was actually making guitars before he got into sculpting.
Well, yeah, him and his brother have a band as well. So, like, he's a multifaceted artist.
I had a great time with them. They were cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they go to art school, learn how to do this stuff. They get a job, or they get an internship at Hasbro or Mattel or Jazzwares or whatever. And they intern for a while. They learn the business a bit. And it's not, you know, your first job isn't making articulated action figures. It's making a shoe. It's making an accessory. It's making, you know. So like, because I'm old and starting this new career, or started, I guess it's been like four years. Like, if I was doing this the conventional way and I was 18, 19, 20, 21, out of school, starting, I'd probably be about where I am right now. And a lot of it's because I am on social media and I've made myself approachable from, you know, these like the smaller independent guys. And that's kind of got me my traction, I guess.
You're everywhere as far as I can see.
Like, you close your eyes and you dream of me.
I do. That's right.
Awesome.
You and Chris worked together and did the Joe Fest custom class Slaughter. And now you're working with Brian and Travis on something for Assembly Required, which I know is not a Jolanta conversation, but half of this conversation isn't Jolanta. We're friends. We're all over the damn place.
Yeah, maybe it's worth having the conversation about a custom class for Jolanta next year. I have a bunch of stuff that needs to get done before I have a serious talk with anyone about that, but I'm certainly open to it. Yeah, the assembly required the Codename IO guys. This is, I think, the third year that I'm working with them on a something. And I'm really just doing the sculpting. I think Travis does the print, and then they're handing that off to Kobe. Because it's his class. It's Kobe's show. So he's making molds, and he's casting the parts, which is outstanding, because that's a better way to do it. Casting's hard, man.
And Kobe's done it for a long time.
Yeah, he's really good at it. So that just absolutely awesome. It's the right way to do it. So it's an Outback body, and I think you can probably use either one. I don't know that I don't believe there's any difference between the two except the color, obviously. And then it's a secondary. So you get, it'll be like an iron grenader / leather jacket with no sleeves and a sporran, and it's pretty cool. And then a head. And the head has like a removable hairpiece, so you can also put on, we've got like an iron grenader helmet with some hair coming out the back.
That's going to be fantastic.
And then we did a sunglass version of the head. So it's, you know, we kind of went with the hair from They Live, and I love that movie. So we did the sunglass version. And then that way, like, if you can't paint eyes and have no interest in trying, you have an option. Because painting eyes is the devil.
And Chris won't be there to help.
Chris will not be there to help. And oh, yeah. And then the gun for it. When we had our first conversation, I told them I want to do a blunderbuss. And they were, with like a drum mag. And they were like, yes. So that's what we did.
Why a blunderbuss of all things? I mean, I love it. I think it's amazing looking.
Because it's silly. Because it hasn't been done.
Two perfect reasons.
So back at whatever point when I did that shark, the two-seat shark, I had talked, like, because I'm pretty sure I did that during the live stream. And the guns on the original shark, you know, they pop up and it's these two, I call them blunderbusses. They look like air horns.
They do.
On the shark.
Very much, yes.
And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like in the cartoons and the comics, whenever you saw the shark shooting, that's not what it looked like. So I did different guns. But I said blunderbuss out loud that day, and it'd been in my head to make one ever since. So this was the kind of the opportunity to do something silly.
That's going to be perfect. And I hope that everyone that comes to Assembly Required jumps into this class because they're going to enjoy it. Kobe is fantastic. And there is a small crew of loyalists ever since he started doing his custom class with the vehicles. So I expect those same guys to be in the figure one, but I hope others jump in as well. And maybe people that can't join start hitting you guys up, because you also did a working water gun chest piece and backpack for the for the Eco Warriors armor kit.
It's for armor.
So it's going to be fun.
I think that was this year. Yeah,
it might have been this year. I have all of his gear kits and armor kits, so sometimes it's hard for me to keep track of which one was which year, but they're all very fun. Back to Jolanta, you know, from a vendor perspective, because I travel with and am a part of Destro's Toy Den, and we had two booths. We were set up right across from some 12-inch friends from the Kentuckiana and Toylanta eras. So, you know, we were never bored. We always had somebody to chit-chat and talk to. We still did well in selling things.
Oh, it flew by.
And we genuinely had a good time. The things that were kind of disappointing to us were a couple of our normal hangout and bullshit friends were working the show. So they were, you know, out front working the booth and selling tickets and helping people find things. So we didn't get to hang out. But I thought the show was great. I thought the weather was perfect. The walk from the hotel through the parking garage and across the little pavilion and into the building was nice. The bathrooms were enormous and clean. It was nice. We had a good time. It's always, like you mentioned earlier, it's always nice to see Dawn and Chris. It's always nice to see Carson. Always a lovely time to hang out with Michael Hill. You know, all of our other friends there. Brett was very attentive, making sure that all of his guests and his vendors were, you know, at least having a good time, even if weather messed up attendance, which and I don't want to make it sound like it was completely dead. Like we still did well. We still made money.
I was very surprised how well I did. You know, was it what I was hoping for? No, but financially, like I did fine. I made money. I didn't break even. I didn't lose money. I made money. Like I did fine. I did fine.
And I think that's kind of the hope is that we came in with a certain level of expectation. Weather kind of messed that up, but we were not broken. And knowing who all didn't show up because of a traumatic event in our country, I'm confident the next year is going to be great. We had this thing on the way down where we stopped at a friend's house who was selling off a collection.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And it's raining. We're pulling a new trailer, which is bigger and heavier. And it's getting dark because it's no longer going into summer. And GPS pulled us off the interstate and took us through the back roads. And we end up going around these dark, tight, two-lane, small, windy, mountainous roads. And, you know, on the driver's side, you know, you look down a cliff into a river, and on the passenger side, you look up into a wall of kudzu.
Yeah.
Every like quarter mile is a sign that is just a big wavy line that shows you that the road is continuing to not be safe for us to be driving on in the dark, in the rain with a trailer. We're going, you know, 30 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour. We can't, you know, even the GPS can't show us the road. It just shows us the next curve. We keep looking up and seeing that the speed limit is 55. We're like, there's no way on this planet. And so our 5 hours felt like 10 or 11. When we get to our buddy's house, we see his collection. We pack everything into the garage so that we're ready to load it into the trailer in the rain. Take photos, share laughs and stories, and hang out with our buddy. Load everything up. We're telling him about this trip, and he starts laughing. He was like, I don't know why it took you that way. You are less than 2 minutes from the interstate. It's going to be so easy getting to the convention floor for my house. So we get out of his neighborhood. Sure enough, 2 minutes later, we jump on the interstate leading southwest from his place down to Duluth. It's a 53-minute drive, and it felt like 20 minutes. It was so, so lovely and nice. And we pull in. Everybody's texting us like, you know, the hurricane's coming through your area. Be careful. It's going to be a category 2 when it hits. We're like, all right, that's an hour and a half from now. So we got to the hotel an hour and a half before that point was going to hit. And it was downgrading from the 4 to a 3 to a 2. And we were like, it, you know, going to be dangerous and scary, but it's going to pass over. We're going to be fine. Again, we were just sort of in a weirdly perfect pocket.
Yeah.
We got so very lucky that even as it went through, it was heavy rain. The trees outside were bending and bowing. It never got dangerous. We were never in harm's way. And those, you know, 30, 40 an hour from us that were, I mean, it's heartbreaking.
It was real hard to bring myself to complain about attendance.
Correct.
Knowing how bad it was for so many people.
Yeah. And we were, you know, that first morning, you know, it was sprinkling as we load in. And by the time, you know, we get the truck unloaded, it's dry. Then it becomes perfect weather, and we're like, oh, it should be a great weekend. The hurricane must not have been a big deal. And then we start seeing the news, and we're like, oh, shit, we just happened to be
in this perfect little pocket.
Yeah, like, I don't know how we ended up in this one, you know, untouched area, but everything. So it was sobering.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
It was sobering that our worst complaint was, we did okay. And that's why I'm looking forward to Toylanta in March, and I'm looking forward to Joelanta next fall. I'm looking forward to seeing what this show can be as Brett and his team continue to massage and work on it and bring it back to sort of the Joelanta, Toylanta reputation of old. And if you keep showing up, then we're going to keep sharing beers and meal or so, but I'm just kind of excited that we could spend another weekend together.
Yeah, and we're like a month from AR right now, so
yeah, we'll get to clink cups over barbecue in just 30 days.
I really did want to talk Jolanta, but I am very excited about AR this year.
It's kind of a given. Anytime you and I sit down, we have one thing to talk about. We talk about seven. So,
right.
And AR is exciting, right? We're past Jolanta. We can't convince people to show up to 2024. All we can say is that we had a good time. We got very lucky with our pocket of weather while the rest of the Southeast burned or flooded, and that 2025 Jolanta is going to be amazing. But we can also say, like, we're going to be able to hang out again in just 30 days. And I'm very excited for that as well. I know we talked about everything. Is there anything that we missed?
I could talk to you the rest of the day.
Same. Yes.
I wanted to say my part and say, like, Jolanta, despite the weather, was a success.
Yes.
Yes, attendance was visibly slow, but like the potential is there for it to be one of the big shows.
The one thing I can say that was a disappointment about Jolanta this year, as we wrap up, is we did not do a drunken record.
Yeah. Like, we just kept doing this.
There was no, like, real good secondary place to kind of shuffle off to and do it. And so with this particular lobby, still a very good hangout in the lobby, still lots of good chatting and everything else. But if we're going to do a drunken record, we might need to shuffle off to somebody's room for an hour and do the record.
Yeah.
And so that is just lessons learned, but is the one disappointment, because the only one we were missing was John Russell. And it would have been lovely for him to be there, but the rest of us were, we could have slotted in Michael Hill and just kept it running.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.